Ryan Burrow is the WGN Radio News Director. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. You dropped a podcast series in four parts at WGNRadio.com today. What's that about?
Yeah, it's actually been something I've been working on for several years now. As someone who's covered a lot of mass shootings, in fact, 10 of them, Highland Park was my 10th over the years, I really wanted to kind of wrap my head around them and talk about it deeper than what we usually do when we see these things on TV, right? Usually we see them, we find out how many are dead, how many people are injured, and we move on to the next thing. Usually it eventually leads to us talking about mental health versus guns. Nothing really gets done, and we move on to the next one. But I really had an opportunity to talk with a lot of people, break down some of the numbers, see who's behind these, see how we in the media cover them, and really try to find positive solutions inside of communities to prevent these from happening again. We tend to just put it all on politicians and say, go fix this for us. And, well, you know, here we are. It hasn't really worked since Columbine. So this is something that I've been working on for a while, and I really wanted to kind of wrap my head around all these different facets of these mass shootings.
I mentioned the Highland Park shooting, but this isn't just about that, but rather maybe an example of what you're talking about. And as an ABC News correspondent for years, you really did travel the country, sometimes being dispatched at a moment's notice to some of these places, right?
Yeah, Parkland. I was in Las Vegas. I was in Dayton. I was in Aurora, Illinois. There were a few others that I'm sure people won't remember. Chattanooga, Kalamazoo. And it really wore on me having to do this and to go and cover those. And I have a feeling it wears on these people. We tend to forget, too, about the trauma that's left behind with these communities. You may not have even been a direct part of it, but the entire community feels it after something like this happens. So we dive a little deeper into that, and that's something that Highland Park is going through right now, obviously.
You know, I call it the Highland Park shooter because I think one of the problems is, and I don't know what your thought about this is, I understand why you feel the need to use the name. You're talking about an individual in some of your reporting. But I think that as we mention the names and do the biographical sketches, it somehow gets into the head of the next shooter. The notoriety that the shooters have, even if they spend the rest of their lives in jail, is somehow, I think, attractive to these people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a deep dive. There's a great agency called the Violence Project. They do a deep dive on this, and you'd be surprised to know that actually only 7% of all mass shooters are seeking fame. It doesn't mean that they don't want to be known, and obviously they are able to go and search previous shootings and some may be inspired. And it's not so much that these shootings are linked to each other, but in the case of perhaps El Paso and Dayton, which were back to back, I don't even know if you remember those from 2019. It's not as though they were related at all, but when someone sees some of the media mm-hmm. coverage of one of mm-hmm. them, it enables them, right? It makes them think, oh yeah, maybe I'll do that. Maybe now's the time. It kind of triggers something in their mind that, this is something that is possible.
Well, I'm not a psychologist, but that's my thinking. So what's the first episode of your series about then?
The first thing we do is we talk about kind of how the media handles this. What are some of the things that you see and you hear, and how do we in the media kind of pose this to you? And the fact is that we've gotten really good at covering these. We pretty much have this down. We know exactly what images you'll see, who you'll hear from, but it's not necessarily helpful. We tend to just race to the scene. We end up grabbing a bunch of shell-shocked people, getting them on tape, and, we don't really solve a problem. And I kind of want to step back a little bit and have people really understand what we're doing in the media, what we're doing wrong, and really get a better understanding. So now, next time when you watch these unfold on TV, you understand a little bit more about what's going on, what we're doing wrong, and kind of how to take some of this information in.
I don't suppose it's the reporter's job to solve it, though. It's their job to tell you the story, right?
Correct. It is. But is throwing a microphone and a camera in someone's face helpful? Who is that helpful to, other than, satisfying the itch we have? Just taking a little step back and a bigger look, because there is a pattern there. There's a pattern that we fall into, and it's not helping, advance us in this phase of trying to solve these things.
Yeah, I get your point about maybe the lack of sensitivity And frankly, we have become desensitized to these things too, don't you suppose?
We have. We absolutely have. It's really comes down to kind of, well, how bad was this one? Instead of saying, you know, oh my goodness, you know, we need to stop these. It's, well, that one wasn't that bad, or that one was really bad, and then we move on to the next thing.
So your first one maybe talks about how we talk about these things. What else do you cover in your series?
We're going to talk a little bit with people in Highland Park. We talked to the mayor about the plan of remembrance. They're putting up a place of remembrance. They're going to talk about how they're going to remember some of the victims of the Highland Park shooting. We talked with someone from Sandy Hook and the resiliency plans that they went through following the shooting that happened there. We talk with Antonio Romanucci, who is representing many of the victims' families. And we talk with Kristen Zeman, remember that name? The Aurora police chief,
sure.
Who obviously dealt with a shooting when she was the police chief of Aurora. And then she also was on the Department of Justice task force looking into the Uvalde shooting and kind of some of the breakdowns there. She's got a lot. She's done a lot of research on these kind of shootings. As different as they may be, they are in many cases similar. And we have a great discussion about that.
Robert Cremo Jr. is the man charged with the shooting in Highland Park.
I want to correct that. Robert Cremo III. Robert Cremo Jr. is actually his father.
His father,
yeah.
Who actually went to jail too, right?
He did. He spent a month behind bars for endorsing his son's purchase of the alleged weapon, which obviously he was convicted. So this is where it gets weird, right? Because we want to say suspected shooter, alleged shooter. He has not been convicted yet, but you know, everything right now that we've heard and seen to this point has pointed to them not getting this guy wrong, you know, as far as who was the gunman that day.
Do you talk in your series about holding the parents of these young people or the people that at least helped them purchase the guns to some degree criminally liable for the crimes that these people commit?
We do get into that, and that's been a tool that's being used more frequently now. We saw it in, obviously, this case. We saw it with the Nashville Waffle House shooter. His father, who was actually from Illinois, was charged with helping his son purchase the weapon. We saw what happened in Michigan with the Oxford High School shooter. Those two parents are spending more than a decade behind bars. Now, they've appealed that, and we'll see how that all turns out. But no, this is, and in Georgia, the school shooting that happened there in 2024, the father of the shooter there has also been charged. So it's a tool that's being used more and more frequently to try to, you know, combat this down the road.
The judge set the trial date for February 25th. So is that going to happen now?
Yeah, as of now, it's all going to happen. We are on pace. I was at the case management hearing yesterday, very short. And as we reported that the judge is going to allow victim witnesses in the courtroom. There was concern that having them in the courtroom when they're not testifying could be a problem, a distraction. The judge said, no, we're going to move forward with that. The prosecutors wanted those people in court. The defense said, no, we don't. But the judge ruled in favor of the prosecution.
This Robert Cremo, the third kid, is a tough case to defend. He is goofy in some ways, flashing peace signs, smiling, seeming to be indifferent to the harm he's caused. I don't know that he's apologized for it. Sometimes the people will in a sober moment or maybe trying to cop a little sympathy. He seems to have none of that. His appearance is so strange. That 47 tattoo on his face has been a number of intrigue for a lot of people. Is that because it was on 7-4? Is it a reference to Donald Trump? Who knows? But he is an odd character, and you have corresponded with him, right?
Yeah. I sent. I'll step back and say that I've actually been sending a lot of these mass shooters letters. It started a couple of years ago. I have not gotten all that many back, and you know, in many cases, first of all, most of these mass shooters do not survive. So we're talking about a dozen right now that I've kind of been tracking and following and sending letters to, and some of them have not. You know, you may not recognize them. Some of them have asked me not to publicize stuff, so I really haven't. Cremo was interesting, though, because he's still set to trial. He has not been convicted of anything, whereas a lot of these people have already been convicted. They're behind bars. So we started a correspondence. He doesn't answer, you know, with very long statements, but Yeah, he's answered a few of my questions. And I do want to be careful here, John, because obviously you've got a community in Highland Park that's going to, you know, go through this whole thing again with trauma after, you know, what happened 3 years ago. And, you know, we have a trial that starts on Monday, and I don't want to, you know, muddy the pool up there. But he has said some things to me that maybe would be worthy of the community getting out there.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm not going to read his statements to me because I don't want to be his mouthpiece, but I'll kind of give you three things he said here. Number one, he does not deny that he was the gunman that day. And in fact, the one thing that we've never had answered is the why. And from the letters that he told me, I'll just summarize. I'm not going to use his words directly, but the attack from him was anti-Semitic. That was the goal when he was there. So he also made some references to Hamas, which seemed pretty nonsensical to me. But I don't think we had heard that before as far as a reason. Now, Sun-Times did a story immediately after the shooting that a rabbi had noticed him kind of lurking around a synagogue and thought it was strange, and security was involved in that. But nothing really came of it. So it kind of fits in that line. And then during one of the case management hearings, he did come out with a Quran, which was strange. He had never done that before. It was right after my letter exchange with him. And so I don't know if he's playing us. I really don't know if that's the case or not, but that seems to be the indication right now.
Ryan Burrow is the WGN Radio News Director. His four-part series is at WGNRadio.com about all of these complicated issues around mass shootings. The trial starts on the 25th. Why don't you check in with us again next week, Ryan?
Okay, sounds good.